name is Emily Franson, your host and producer for Welcome to My Nerd Brain. I'm so excited to welcome you guys to the very first episode of Season 3, and I'm thrilled to kick off this season with my first guest, Mac Phipps. Mac is a rap and hip-hop artist based here in New Orleans who has been kind enough to share his story with us on the show today. Mac, I would like to welcome you to my Nerd Brain.
Well, I think it's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. So I reached out to your wife, Mac, who has just been lovely and pleasant to work with. And I had finished reading an article about some recent talks on violence that you were giving kind of around town to some young students in the New Orleans area following your release from prison after 21 years served in jail. Can you talk to me a little bit about what drove you to start doing those talks with kids?
Well, I think about 12 years ago, or close to it, I was around that time that I started mentoring in the prison. Officially mentoring, I would say, because I had been just mentoring little guys the whole time I was there, but I officially like joined mentorship programs and stuff. And I think it was mainly because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to understand my son was my initial reasoning, because I left a son, you know, when I got incarcerated, his mother was pregnant, and I didn't get a chance to see him grow up. So in prison, you know, I wanted to connect with the youth to basically try to understand my son. But over time, I just fell in love with mentoring, and, you know, I had a way of basically giving back or trying to use my experience to help someone else.
Right. And I've read several articles about you in preparation, you know, for this interview. And one thing that came up in one of those articles was the perception, I think, particularly in the rap and hip hop world, that an artist's lyrics really represent their lives and are, you know, should be taken at face value. You know, how do you think that has affected the youth over the years as hip hop has grown into a, you know, more popular genre?
Well, I do believe it's dangerous to take what a lot of artists say at face value, because, you know, I won't just say that there probably aren't some people that are, and it's very rare that there are some people that are actually living or attempting to live or attempting to live what they speak about on their songs, but that's very rare. You know, by and large, you know, it's art, you know, people expressing themselves. It's a chance for them to be that alter ego or be that character, you know, on records that they don't be in real life. And I mean, same thing for the listeners. A lot of listeners, you know, we listen to music that just brings us somewhere else, that gives us an escape from our own reality. Mm-hmm. So that's what I attribute it to. I don't think that I would go on record to say that probably 80, I don't know what percentage I said in the last interview, but it's a large percentage of it is just entertainment.
Right. So in your talks with, you know, some of the younger generation, do you find that they know that, or is that something they're not aware of?
I think for young people, I think it's the responsibility of us as an adult, or the responsibility of adults, to talk to our youth about what they're listening to and kind of give them, pick their brain about it, you know, see what they like about it. And, because many of them minds aren't developed enough to separate the reality from the fantasy. Right. Some of those youth, they really think that these guys are living that way. And in response, many of them, because they see these people as successful, they try to emulate that lifestyle, because at the end of the day, people emulate what they consider success. Mm. And if they see that this is, or they're given the perception that this is success, they tend to follow it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, in the article that I read, I want to say it was one from a few years back. The specific discussion was about how that perception may have affected your own experiences, you know, in your trial, et cetera. Do you feel like that was a factor?
What, the perception or?
The perception of, you know, your art being who you are as a person. You know, if this person can rap right. about doing this, then this must be what kind of guy this he person. Is.
Right. Right. And that was definitely the tactic. And it was used nefariously, of course. And I think it was used because they really didn't have anything else to go on with me, you know, right. but and every situation is different. But for mine, I mean, here you were accusing a person who had no criminal background, no criminal record of murder. So the only thing that they could point to at that time was my song lyrics and trying to attack what they believe was my character in music and trying to draw connection between the character on the music and myself because it was convenient for them in their trial strategy.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I would guess, too, at the time, this was the 90s, correct? So, right. I mean, that was pretty early on in the hip hop world. I would guess a lot of, you know, people serving on that jury really had no idea what that world was even about.
Right, know? Right. And that's the truth. And you know, that's why, it was easy to forgive those people because, I mean, right. the reality is those people probably perceived me a certain way because of their lack of knowledge of who I was or what I represented. And, I mean, unfortunately, I suffered for it. And it's just something that I do believe. And I do think that we should be more mindful mm-hmm. of not only what we say as artists, but more importantly with us adults, to be more mindful of what our kids are listening to and how they feel about it. We should talk to them about it instead right. of just casually passing it off. And, oh, that's garbage. That's garbage. You're listening to that garbage. Well, unfortunately, our kids are attracted to some of the things that we call garbage. And we need to, I think, listen to it ourselves and try to find that middle ground where we can discuss it with them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know what I was thinking about when I was reading these articles is that, strangely enough, this is not anything that's new. I mean, it's common knowledge that most major pop stars don't write their own music. They're singing words that somebody right. else has written for them, and nobody questions that. It's like that's everybody knows. Okay, this person is just singing what's, you know, gonna make the charts at whatever
right, right.
whatever time. I don't really understand why that hasn't translated over to hip hop. You know, why is it that more common knowledge that this is just a part of the art? It seems strange right. to me.
I think it's multifaceted. I think part of it is the fact that we as artists propagate, and many artists we propagate this perception that we all true to our word, like this is real, I'm real, I'm okay. true to this.
Yeah.
And the consumer, they eat that part up. I mean, if they think that right. you're real or think that you're true to what you say, it don't have to be real, but if they believe that you're real to what you say, then it makes you more authentic to them. That's right. one, I think that's one facet of it. The other one is, I mean, just the reality, hip hop was a predominantly African-American art form in its beginning stages. And I just think that I think as a society as a whole, I think we just, you know, and I like to consider myself as part of that whole. I think that we just generally, we have a different perception when it comes to things of we approach African-American art in a different way. I mean, there's a rock band called The Killers. Nobody's accusing them of any.
Right.
You can't get no raw than that. I mean,
but, you also can't get any more white than that band. So.
Right, right. It's like you have the Killers aren't perceived in the same way as C Murder.
Right. Exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
And
I think it's unfortunate. I just think it's unfortunate that we look at things that way, and I just hope that I hope that we as a society as a whole, I just hope we grow past that.
No, I agree. And I think, like you said, there's when a lot of us see things that we don't understand, I think rather than asking questions or looking further into it, most of us are very happy to slap a label on it and move on.
Right, right. Because it's convenient.
Exactly.
And it places it in a convenient space for us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And no, you're absolutely right. It's something that I think everybody needs to work on.
Right.
So then getting back to these talks that you're doing with kids, at what has the reception been like amongst them? Do you feel like it's helping?
Well, whether it's helping, that, I think that is a question that can only be answered in time.
That's
you know, with basically checking on the kids. But the reception has been great. You know, they were engaged. They had some real interesting questions for me. And I love when kids ask questions because they're going to always hit you with some stuff that you're going to be like, what the? How did you even, how did that even come to your mind out of what I just said? But I like it, though, because it keeps me on my toes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. I think it's great that you're doing that, and I think it's something that's very necessary, I think, especially here in New Orleans, where we do have such a vast gap in, you know, particularly financials right now. You know, it just makes it very difficult for kids to stop the cycle yeah, of ending up on the streets. So moving on to your personal journey just a little bit, you know, since we do talk about health and wellness on here, you seem like you're very in tune with yourself, and I don't know that many people would after what you've been through. How did you keep up, you know, your mental health and try to stay positive throughout and after your incarceration?
I have to be honest with you. I have the total opposite perspective. If you spend as much time by yourself as I have, you would be very in tune with yourself. because hey, you spend a lot of time with yourself. So I think for me, you know, I made a promise to myself when I first got incarcerated that I was going to make myself better. Any flaws or any things about myself that I perceived as counterproductive, I made it my business to try to wash that out of my system. And I didn't want to be bitter. You know, after all that I had gone through, it was horrible. But I always, you know, one of my biggest prayers was that I didn't want to become just black-hearted, just mad and just angry at the world for what had happened to me. Because in that sense, when you do that, that means they won. You know, you already locked me up physically. I couldn't let you have my mind.
Yeah.
So I just kind of looked at, I started looking at it in a different way. I had just tricked myself into saying like, yo, this is my castle. The people that work here, my guards, the library is my den or my whatever it is.
Right. I go.
The cafeteria was my dining hall. You know what I mean? And I just, and the school building was where I went to learn. I wanted to learn. So that's kind of what kept me, that's what kind of kept me, and to some degree, mentally, I guess mentally, it's a word I want to use. I can't think of it, but you know, it kept me mentally ready. And, the other thing was just family support. You know, family support was very important. I think the fact that I looked forward to seeing my family every week or every 2 weeks. And part of that is what gave me the focus and the motivation to keep doing the right thing so that, you know, my family could be able to see me, because those privileges can't be taken away from you in prison
right.
if you ain't doing the right thing.
Right. Yeah, I think what you mentioned about, you know, being bitter, that's the part that strikes me so much, because I've read enough of, you know, interviews with you to not have the slightest clue as to how that case ever got to trial, much less how you ended up in jail. And of course, I know you've told this story 4,001 times, and you don't have to get into any more of it than you want on here. But I don't know how you couldn't be angry after that and how, you know, because that would stick with me for sure. I would be angry.
Right. Oh, I was angry. Don't let me say this. I was very angry at some point, but I just had to, you know, I reached a point in my life at some point early on. I realized that early on during my incarceration, I realized that being angry wasn't going to help me get out of there. I had to look at myself like, yo, I had to basically remove my emotions from the situation in order for me to effectively help myself. It's like, okay, I had to start looking at myself like, I was my client, right? I was my own attorney, and Mac Phipps was my client, and I had to get him out of there. So I had to approach the situation that way, because if I didn't, every time I read my transcripts or every time I read anything that had to do with my incarceration, it just made me mad as hell.
Yeah.
So what I did was I had to change my approach. And I mean, Emily, I like to win. I'm going to just be honest. I'm a winner. I like to win. And when you're incarcerated, winning is getting out. So I started paying attention. I started paying attention to the guys who were in similar predicaments as mine who were getting out. And I just followed their path. The stuff I saw them doing, I started doing it because I was like, yo, if this is the path to winning, then I'm about to go on this path because I want to win.
Right.
And ultimately, you know, those things that I did, it led to that moment where I was let out.
Right. So you've been out for, has it been a year now? Or has it been more than a year?
Nah, not yet. Actually, it'll be a year in June. I got out last June. So it's been like 7 months, something like that.
So
7-8 months.
How has that transition been? Do you find that, well, I mean, you're on a podcast right now where I'm asking all these questions about everything you've been through. You know, what is it like having to bring it up again?
As far as the case or the situation?
Well, all of it, really.
Well, that don't really bother me. You know, I don't really know how to describe it or explain it, but that part of it don't really bother me. I just get, you know, I kind of get sad when I think about my friends that I left. Because there are some good guys that I came across in prison that, you know, that has, some of them have like life, they're never getting out. And it's just, I get sad when I think about those people.
True. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that either. Well, and you know, not to mention just the, I don't know how you come out after 21 years into this, our current world.
I know. I'm going to tell you. I felt like a dinosaur my first couple of months. I didn't know what was going on. And even now, there are things I'm still learning that is new. But when I have to tell you the first couple of months, if my wife wasn't there, I'd have been lost. Because I had no idea technology had been, you know, I was in like a time warp for 21 years. So when I get out, the phones are now basically everything. The phone just flipped out. When I left the streets, you just flipped the phone and made a phone call.
Oh, yeah. So it was good times.
This is weird, but I like it. I like it because it makes things much more convenient.
Right. Yeah, in the process of talking to your wife, I was mentioning, I said, you know, it'd probably be better if he does it on a laptop. Because when people use phones, very often the signals cut out. She's like, yeah, we have a learning curve here. So we're just going to help him out. I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about that at all.
Yeah, she'd be having to show me some stuff because some of this stuff is like Chinese to me. I don't know.
Well, most of the rest of us don't get it either. So we're all just faking it till we make it. But
guess what? That's a good strategy. Maybe I need to start doing that.
So, I mean, let's talk about the trauma of going through something like this. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier that I think it's really hard, really in any family or in any situation where one person has experienced a significant trauma, not to pass it down to that next generation. And of course, that's how we end up in these situations where, you know, kids do get caught up in trouble at a young age. How do you, you know, how do you feel like you can keep that from happening? Not you specifically, but, you know, how do you feel like people can maybe, you know, work on their own traumas in order to create a better future for the next generation?
Right. Well, all right. So here's my perception. And my perception is, mind you, I've been incarcerated for 21 years. So my perception is twisted. So this is the way I kind of see that. Trauma is real. I think that 99% of the people on this planet experience trauma. Mm-hmm. Some sort of trauma in some form. And for everyone, trauma is different. Right. So it's like what may be traumatic for this person is not necessarily traumatic for that person. And it is a real thing, and people deal with it in their everyday lives. Where I where it gets gray for me is the fact that all of us experience it, right? So in some ways, the question could be raised, is it really a thing if everybody's experiencing it? Right. Because it's almost as common as a cold, right? And I think that for the generation that came after us, or after me rather, it became almost like an emphasis was put on so much, I think, that it actually gave more credence to certain things than it needed to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And some people lean on these things for their bad habits or bad character traits. It's like, yo, well, I've been through this. Well, everyone on planet Earth has went through something. I mean, does that excuse your ill behavior? And I do think that some trauma is definitely far worse than others. You know, some people have gone through some stuff that is like, yo, you know, like how could a person even survive after something like that? And I mean, even my own situation, just looking at what I went through, it was traumatic. But how I balanced that off is I met a guy when I was in prison. He had done 46 years for a rape he didn't commit. And the DNA finally freed him through the Innocence Project. I was angry.
Yeah.
I was more angry about his situation than my own, because this was one of the best people I met in prison. This was a genuinely good person. And I was mad with life. I found myself sometimes mad with the concept of God. Like, how does this happen to someone like that? Like, I looked at my own situation like, this is nothing what I'm going through. This man got locked up at 19 and he wasn't let out until he was in his 60s for a rape that he didn't commit. And he was the most humble person I had ever met in my life.
Right.
And because he was so humble, I didn't even like talking to him. I didn't like being around him, because being around him just made me more conscious of his situation and made me more angry at the system.
Right.
So I looked at situations like his, and it really brought mine, it made me put my situation in perspective. And I just looked at, you know, okay, there are people in far worse situations than you. And that was it. That was kind of how I dealt with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting the way that you talk about trauma is kind of the same way I feel about it. I feel like trauma to some extent, and I don't know, maybe you haven't seen this as much just because you haven't been, you know, involved in the media as much. But trauma to some extent has become kind of a four-letter word, where we apply the word trauma to anything and everything.
Anything.
You know?
Right.
It's like, okay, well, you know, there's a difference between trauma and like a bad day.
Exactly. It's like traumatic to me is someone getting raped. That's traumatic to me.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's somebody forcibly took something from you that you didn't give them. That's traumatic. But if somebody steals your car, that's not trauma to me. I mean, it just is what it is. Now, we're not talking about carjacking. Carjacking, of course, I would say that's traumatic because someone put a gun in your face and took your car.
Right.
But if somebody steals your car, that's not traumatic to me. It's like they stole your car. Okay.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is, like you said, I think that's very different for different people, because I think somebody from a, and this is very much me just hypothesizing, but somebody from a wealthy background might consider having their car stolen being a very traumatic experience. You know, just not having that one thing that you want, or that one thing that you expect to always have. Now, I could be wrong, but like you said, I mean, I think it's very situational. And I think that our overuse of the word trauma really does take away from, you know, the people who have suffered
real trauma,
real things, you know?
Right. And that's my stance on it. It's like we have to be very careful about how we use that word and what we attribute it to.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think personally get a little sensitive to people not understanding how other people deal with their trauma, you know.
Right.
For example, in my own personal world, I mentioned to you before this that I'm a classical pianist and I've had three hand surgeries. I can't really play anymore because of them. I mean, I can, but I can't like perform. But anyway, after my third surgery, I had somebody tell me that I just seemed like I was too okay. And it's just kind of like, look, I mean, the first and second time I went through this, yeah, it was traumatic. But at this point,
like, at this point, this is just like,
I was diagnosed with arthritis 10 years ago. It's not like I didn't know it was coming. I had plenty of time to prepare, you know? And it's that kind of...
You're a professional at getting surgery.
It's that kind of stuff, okay. Where it's like, look, I understand how from the outside looking in, this seems like a horrible experience and it wasn't great, but I'm not going to sit around and cry about it. You know?
It is what it is. I totally understand.
So,
because did you, and just to ask you,
sure.
Did your arthritis come from, or was it like, did it come from, you think, playing? You think it came from playing the piano?
I have a medical condition called hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's fairly rare. It's a medical condition wherein, first of all, most of my major joints overextend. So I put a lot of extra stress on my joints than most people. And at the same time, my connective tissue, it's a deterioration of the connective tissue. So like all of my ligaments and joints and tendons and all of that are deteriorating at a much faster rate than it would for most people.
Yeah, so, that's what's happening with my back. So it's the same. I have that. They diagnosed me with something. Yeah, dealing with my back, telling me, you're they were like your tissue between your bones is deteriorating. I'm like, is it gonna kill me? Like, no. I said, well, I'm good.
Well, and I have problems with my back too. Like the past couple of months I've been spending getting the nerves burned out of my back, which sounds way worse than it actually is.
Yeah, that does sound horrible.
It's actually not that bad at all.
Okay. I don't think you need to express that way ever again to anyone. It does sound horrible.
It's really not that bad, I promise. But
I just got my back burnt up.
It's better than the alternative, which is just, you know, my back in general. So, you know.
like I always tell people, who needs a bag? You can buy one on the internet. They sell everything else.
It's true. I always joke with my parents. I'm like, you know, maybe by the time I'm like 60 and 70, they'll have like come up with robots for all of these things that I can't do anymore. And then I'll be fine.
They will. They might have them already.
Right. No, but anyway, that's so it's not like it was just the piano. Of course, the piano didn't help things, but no, that was the situation. So, but the point is, like you said, I mean, you can only be angry and mad for so long before you just start getting disgusted with yourself.
You go from angry to pitiful.
Right.
I ain't never want to be pitiful. I ain't never want to be that woe is me, like, oh, my life is so, yeah. And it's like, all right.
But I think
everybody else.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's kind of how I dealt with my own thing. It was like, whenever I felt like woe is me, I was like, dude, you're sitting in prison eating better than some people in some countries. Are you serious? Sit down. You know what I mean? Like, sit down. There are people that's really suffering. People that have to walk miles just to get some clean water.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that's how I kind of just balanced off those thoughts of whenever I felt like I wanted to get angry or I wanted to wallow in my, what is it, wallow in the mire? Or I wanted to wallow in my own sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought about something that was far more uncomfortable than my situation.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. I have a hard time understanding the people who don't want to break that chain of trauma. You know, how do you not want better for the next generation? How do you not?
I think they do. And I just think they don't know how.
Mm, okay.
It's like, because I'm an optimist. First of all, I didn't say that in the beginning. I want to tell you that I have always been an optimist. I'm the one who sees the glass as half full. So I think that everyone on planet Earth want what's best, like for themselves, at least for themselves and the people they love. They don't have to want it for society as a whole. But I believe that most people want what's best or want better for, not all, I said most people want what's better for themselves and their own. And I just think that some people just don't know how. They haven't been taught how to go about getting it. And it's unfortunate because I believe that all of the tools at this point in our, at this point in human development, you know, as far as just us as a civilization, human beings, I believe that all of the tools are available to everyone. Like, there was a time period in human history where education was limited to those who, you know, who were either wealthy or aristocrat or came from some type of royal family. But now, no, education is public. You can learn anything now at the click of a button. Mm-hmm. So I don't really think that people can use the same excuses, even though it doesn't take away the fact that once you've been trained to see, or, you know, been trained, whether it's by your own, doing or by someone else, you know, I can't negate the fact that people have been trained to perceive things a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I do know that the information to change their way of seeing the way they perceive reality, the information is there. And I think once a person take that initial step and learn how to see the world differently, then you'll start doing different. And that's just my view of it. I just think that once we start seeing things differently, then we start doing different.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I looked at it that way necessarily. You know, and if this is not something you want to talk about, let me know, but does religion enter into your beliefs as far as all of this is concerned?
Well, my religious beliefs are my religious beliefs are personal. I am not a religious person,
okay.
But I do believe that, you know, I do believe that there is something greater than myself.
Right.
That created this world. Right. I do believe that. Now, what it is, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. We could just pick. There are so many different philosophies.
Right. And
I think that all of them point to the same principles. And I just take the best of those principles and I try to live by them, because once again, it's about winning to me. I've seen many of these principles at work in other people's lives that won. So I like to win. So I follow those principles.
Okay. Yeah. No, we're pretty much in the same space as far as that's concerned. I was just curious because you mentioned God earlier. I didn't know if that was something that was a big part of, you know, your experience. But
I use that word because that's the word we generally use to describe whatever created this world.
The higher being. Also, right.
Right.
That makes sense. Okay. So final question. This is going to be a hard one, but what do you think we can do as adults to, you know, help perpetuate a more positive future for kids? I think particularly in New Orleans right now, it's gotten a little sad for me being, you know, from here to watch everything that's happening right now. And I know listeners who aren't from here don't always understand why I bring this up, but it's a particularly trying time down here right now.
It is.
You know, what do you think we can do?
All right. Well, the first things I think, and let me say this for the record, I love New Orleans. Like, this is my home. I was born and raised here, and I really can't imagine me being from anywhere else. And I've traveled all over the world, been to different places, and I love many different places. So many places I've been to that were so beautiful. There were a few that was like, eh, but most of them were beautiful. And I can say that there's no place like home. So I am definitely invested in this community, and it's sad to see what is becoming of this community, but I think that as an adult and as adults, one of the things we can do is listen to these kids more. That's the first thing. It has to start with listening. We have to listen. We have to scrap our old ways approaching the old ways that we approached our communication with these kids, our old ways of approaching our relationships with them, because the reality is time is moving, things are changing, and those kids are now, they now have access to the same information that adults have had access to.
True.
We have to keep that in mind. Like, it's no longer the internet changed everything. Mm-hmm. It basically made everyone instantly an adult overnight.
Right.
Because now it made everybody omnipresent, omniscient. It made us all the same. We all have access to the same knowledge. And now I think that what we can do is use our experiences to communicate with the kids, listen to them, and we have to get away from, well, in our day, they did it this way. Well,
yep.
and the reality is that day is over. I'll give you a perfect example. I was in prison with a guy who was much older than I, and he always made a point of saying, see, back in my day, we didn't do this. And he was real hard on the youngsters. And I just told him one day, and it really hurt his feelings, and I didn't mean to hurt his feelings, but I said, brother, if the morals and principles of your day were so profound, why in the hell are you here with me in prison? Like, don't sit here and tell me that you were, because we weren't saints. I think adults try to, like, I think we have this convenient amnesia where we forget that we were kids and we did dumb shit. Excuse my language. So I think we have to meet those kids where they are, listen to them, and by opening up that line of communication, I think it makes it easy for us to give them advice because they'll ask us for it. If we don't have that line of communication with them, we don't build that trust with them and let them know that they can come to us about anything, guess what? They're going to go to somebody else. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to go to somebody in the streets their age who has the IQ of a sandwich themselves and who is going to tell them all of the wrong things.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right.
Because, I mean, if that's the way it works. If, like, if they can't tell it to us, they're going to go tell it to their friend. I mean, I remember my son was telling me years ago, he was expressing to me, we were talking about music, and he was saying, you know, what one of his friends was telling him about, like, yeah, man, he said I should do this, I should do that. And I kind of got in my feelings about that because I was like, if I'm giving you advice, I did this professionally. Don't tell me what your partner is telling you if he never sold no records. Right. But when I really thought about it, I was like, well, I was wrong. I should have listened to what my son had to say and then found a creative way to explain it to him in a way that he gets it.
Right.
Because evidently the young man he was talking to was close to his age and was speaking his language. You know what I mean? So, and yeah. I think that's what we have to do as adults. We have to, in order for us to help these kids, we have to be able to connect with them. And until we make that connection, we just preach into the wall.
Well, and one of the things that's always struck me, you know, I've been a teacher for 20 years, you know, where kids are concerned, is that I think a lot of adults in particular think of kids as not being quite as intelligent as adults. And right. I don't think that's the case at all. I think,
right.
If anything, kids have a better base of knowledge than most adults do because they've still retained it. You know, I remembered everything when I was 16. I don't remember any of that stuff I knew when I was 16 anymore. Right. You know, and if you, like you said, if you just find the right way to talk to them, I think the difference is they're not necessarily as emotionally intelligent. They can't always put a name on what they're feeling. And it takes them a while to talk it out, to get to where they understand. And I don't think adults always give them that chance. You know, it's just, why are you mad? It's like, well, there's 1,000 different reasons why somebody might be projecting something as anger, and it doesn't mean that it's anger. You know?
Right.
And that's unfortunate that we don't take the time to learn, you know? Anyway, those are my thoughts. But yes, I very much agree. Thank you for...
Oh, I know. You're welcome. You're welcome.
...taking the time to talk to me today. It's been a pleasure to chat with you. And...
Oh.
This has been a great start to the season. I frankly wasn't sure I was going to do a third season. And I was like, I want to talk to that guy.
I'm honored to be here. And I'm honored to be here. And I hope that the information I had to share would be helpful to somebody who was listening.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you've been very generous with your time and you know, with your story as well. So I'm going to do some social media shout outs. And I'll give you a chance to shout out anything you're working on right now in just a second. You can find me online at welcometomynerdbrain.com or on Instagram at welcometomynerdbrain. I'm also on Twitter at welcomenerd. Lastly, I do have an online community of both past guests and listeners that you can find on Facebook groups at the Nerd Brainiacs. Okay. and I post exclusive content on that platform. Actually, it's not Lastly. You can also subscribe to the Patreon, which has been in effect for a couple months now. And Mac, your wife has told me that you're going to put together a few book recommendations for me for that Patreon, whether or not you knew it, you know it now.
She kind of briefed me. She briefed me on it. So it was three books I was about to give you, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll we can talk about that a little later, but that'll be available to all the Patreon subscribers once the episode hits. And you can find Mac Phipps on Instagram at Mac Phipps Official. Are there any other social media things you want to shout out, or any projects you're working on you want to talk about?
Well, I do have an upcoming musical project. I don't know if we call them album these days, but it'll be out real soon, and it's dope. It's something that I've been working on. It's like a collection of songs that I wrote while I was in prison. So you're getting the rawest form of me, and it's just great.
Awesome. And do you know when that's going to be out, or where it'll be available? Any of that?
Well, it'll be available on all streaming platforms. It should be available. I would say we have about a month, and about a month it'll be available. Okay. So just keep checking. For those who are listening, just keep checking my Instagram, and I'll be giving you updates.
Awesome. Well, and I'll go ahead and post, you know, some stuff when that comes out as well. So.
Okay.
All right. As always, stay well, stay healthy, and wash your damn hands.
Wow. My sentiments exactly.